This is the Carlton Podcast. Here's your host, Tony Moclair.
Hello and welcome to the fifth official Carlton Podcast for season 2015. I'm Tony Moclair, back after a two-week break, hiatus,
a long layover.
The great Mitch Robinson. Hello, Robbo.
Thanks for having me, mate. No, it's good to be back. As you said, 2 weeks away, I was kind of having a bit of withdrawal symptoms there for a little bit. So yeah. It's definitely good to be back and off the bench, I could say.
We struggled through without you.
I didn't really even listen to the last 2 weeks, apparently, because it was just getting the lowest ratings of the year. And I don't know if it's good to do with the wins and losses, but...
Well, I don't know. We had Jammo in 1 week.
And he got sacked for a reason last year, like, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe you thought.
He might dispute that, but anyway, no, he was an excellent co-host.
I heard he was all right.
As is yourself. Fatherhood, how's it treating you?
Well, it's pretty full on at the moment. A lot of half sleepless nights, but no, it's pretty good. Like, I get home from training and I'll try and do as much as I can. Obviously, I don't have any breasts for breastfeeding, but
yeah.
That's the thing at the moment. You know, I'll get home, I'll bath him, I'll try and keep him calm while Emma does her own thing, and... by the time I get to bed, I'm getting my sleep, and she's looking after him. So
yeah, never forget that with a baby, men do 90% of the work.
That's what I've been telling to everyone. So yeah. I've heard all like
it's not trendy to say that. Women get a bit funny about it, but geez,
hats off to them. They do an amazing job. The baby was. I'll give a rundown of what happened.
Please just tell us the weight again of Little Chance.
No, he's a big boy, but
how heavy was he, Robert?
He was 9.8 pounds, so he was a big boy. So. Kind of thankful in the end that he was in a breech position. So
yep.
We went in for a due date scan, and a week later we found out he done a backflip pretty much. So he was facing the wrong way, and I was a little bit shocked at the time. But you know, we thought when it all happened, she had a cesarean and it came out, and she was like, "Oh my god, he's a big baby." So it was kind of a blessing in disguise, really.
What was your feeling when you saw that?
When I saw the baby.
Yeah, when you burn a Little Chance emerged.
It was pretty
from...
crazy. She said, "It was actually really funny." The lady goes, "Don't be." You know, put off by you might hear like a cappuccino noise when they cut the water around the baby. So, that came out. Then you know they pulled him out with like feet first and twisted him and put his head out, and it was kind of like everywhere. And then I looked into him. He kind of looked around for a little bit and didn't make any noise. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. Then you opened up and started crying, and I'm pretty sure it was the first one he saw. That's why he started crying. But like, this is my dad. But no, like you know, I went over and cut the cord, and yeah, it was a crazy moment. I teared up and stuff. I don't care what man goes in there; everyone has a tear. So,
oh god, yeah.
No, it was pretty good. I had him for about an hour while Emma got stitched up and stuff, and that was my bit of a bonding time with him. Yeah.
And so you said he's sleeping through, or he's not, or you?
No, he's doing really well. Like touch wood, I've been pumping him up a fair bit. He sleeps most of the night, and you know, Emma will get up a couple of times during the night and change him and stuff, but. No, I'll just give him a bath before bed, and he's knocked out for about 4 hours. So, you know, it's kind of finding your own way, and he's been sleeping in the bed a couple of times. So we make sure it's all Sid worthy, and he's like, nothing's going to happen. So he can't lay next to me because I'll probably roll on him and try and give him a big hug. But, he's on Emma's side of the bed.
Emma can't drive then for about three months.
No, she's out of action for 3 weeks. I think it's three or four weeks. And, so I've been doing all the grocery shopping and stuff. Mum was up here for a week to help out a little bit, and she's gone home, so I've kind of had to take it all on.
Okay. Yeah. Now, we're going to welcome a very special guest to the Carlton Podcast today.
Look out. Who we got?
We have a man who made his debut last week against Melbourne. There's been huge raps on this bloke, and with good reason, based on a snippet of what we saw last week. It was very exciting. We welcome to the Carlton Podcast for, we hope, the first of many times, Patrick Cripps.
Cripper.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome, mate.
How are you going, Patrick?
It's all been a bit of a whirlwind the last couple of weeks. It's been amazing to make my debut, but everything's going all right.
We've just heard Robbo's debut as a father, your debut as a player in the old dark navy blue. How was that on Sunday? Saturday.
It was amazing. Obviously, you grow up as a kid wanting to play AFL, and it's really a dream come true. And that feeling when you run out into the ground in front of, I know, probably 30-odd thousand fans for the first time, it's just unreal. Words can't describe it, but... couldn't be happier to make my debut.
Just a few more fans in Geraldton back home.
Yeah.
Just a few more getting around.
Now you've been just tearing them up in the VFL. Have you actually played on the MCG surface before?
No, that was the first time I actually ran out the MCG. So it was all new to me. But it's an amazing deck. So it's unreal with the stadium and how enclosed it is and the way the crowd just echoes around.
What was going through your head the night before?
I try not to think about the game too much the night before. Obviously, you do get nervous when you start thinking about it. So, sort of switched off, had a really good sleep, and I didn't really get too nervous until about a couple of hours before the game and really started to think about it, but yeah, I tried to control myself sort of a fair bit to sort of save my energy.
Now, we'll get to dissecting the Melbourne game in a second, Robbo. You were a late withdrawal. Do you want to tell us why?
Yeah, it happened a couple of weeks ago. I was in a training run and went up for the ball, came down and jarred my knee. I actually was a little bit hyperextended and ended up getting some bone bruising, but it was either the worst or the best case scenario, and I went and got scans, and it was only a bone bruising, so I could have been ACL, PCL, whatever it is, but yeah. I can't really well. So, I got up for the Essendon game, was plenty of rest because it was a long break, and put up pretty well from that, but just during the training last week, just didn't feel too right, and I think a little bit of soreness in my hammy is kind of, is compensating for my knee, and so I didn't pull up as well on the training just before the game, and I was kind of honest with the team, and I said, I don't think I can give you a four-quarter performance, and Nick Graham got to come in and he got to show his skills, and I think it's great to see some young blood coming to the team, and it would have been a lot better if we got a win, and take your hats off to the boys, but we've all got this week, so we've got our main training tomorrow, and we'll see how we go through there, I guess.
Patrick, I'll just ask you before we get into the Melbourne game, when did you know you were playing, and what position were you lined up on?
Big Cripper knew. He had 35 touches, 10 clearances, a couple of goals.
Yeah.
In the VFL week before, so yes. He was licking his lips, let's be honest. Yeah. Let's be honest.
I didn't really find out until probably the Wednesday of the week, that week. I sort of got a few indications from the coaches during the week that I was going to play. I went and saw Mick on Tuesday, and he sort of said he was hoping to play me, but they were having a match committee meeting to see where I fit into things. But I got home one day and rang the parents up, and they actually already knew I was playing, so...
How did that happen? The club called them.
Bit of a leak.
The clubs called them and told them to get over here. But I'd been told that afternoon that I was playing. So Wednesday afternoon, but told I was playing. So it was
free flights, surely.
Yeah, it was.
They might drive over in a Hyundai.
Drive over.
There we go.
Hyundai.
Thanks very much. Hyundai. I always get that wrong.
You made it taken back me last year.
Sorry.
We had a whole off season to try and get that word right. That's all right.
Hey. They're getting a free plug, right?
Yeah, so who came down?
So both parents, my little brother, my nana, had an auntie from Tassie that came up.
Auntie from Tassie? Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Hang on a second.
Hey, there's a Tasmanian
What's
connection.
Going on? You've been hiding that, haven't you?
Yeah, she moved over about 20 years back.
Yeah,
so.
She saw the light and she goes, I might get down to Tassie, that's where it's at.
No, I think she's actually going to move back to WA in a couple of years, so she's seen the light, but good luck to her.
So so you had a family network there watching you run out onto the ground?
Yeah. It was actually a bit of a coincidence. My parents were booked to come over about 2 months before that weekend and had my best mate over from home who came over that week. So it all sort of worked out pretty well. But yeah, I would have had about probably 10 to 15 people there supporting me. So it was great to share
Bloody
the
hell.
Experience
okay.
with them.
So, he's a popular young man.
If you've got a big family, more the merrier.
That's why he's at the Carlton Football Club, the United Carlton Football Club. We didn't get the result we wanted, obviously. What was your impression of being out on the field with the team? Because all this week, the chatter has been about Carlton being down on confidence. Somebody who actually played the game on Saturday, what did you feel out there, Patrick?
Well, I thought we started really well the game. I think we were right on top early on, and we probably didn't get reward for effort in that first sort of 10, 15 minutes where we could have probably nearly had a 5-goal lead. But look, being out there, I'd been a first gamer. I'd sort of a lot of leadership was sort of spoken to me. I remember one time I didn't do a good enough defensive effort, and Lockie Henderson came up to me and really gave me a good serving, said that wasn't good enough. So I think the leadership out there was good. There was no complaints from me being out there personally. The talk was good. It's just, I think our skill execution was probably the main thing that let us down. I think in a lot of the key areas of the game, we actually won in terms of inside 50s, contested ball clearances and all that sort of thing. We just couldn't put it on the scoreboard. So, yeah, I think as a group, we are a close group. There's no doubt about it. I suppose confidence-wise, we sort of need a win to get the season going.
What is the trick? Is confidence the trick in getting a return on that rate of effort?
I think just even confidence in hitting the skills, certain little. If you break it down really fine, that's sort of we're just missing a few kicks, and I don't know whether it's confidence with the confidence in the group actually sort of should I hit that kick? Shouldn't I? Should I go for it? Just them little split decisions. I think once we start getting them right, I think as a team we're not that far off playing some really good footy. So I think once them little things click, we'll be right.
Robbo, when you see the short game, the short kick start happening, as a supporter, I think, okay, they're starting to drop their heads now and they're not backing themselves. Is that a reliable sign? Where does a lack of confidence start in the team? And do you think the problem is as great as it's been described in various media this week?
I've read a few articles this week, and it all points to the confidence in the club and the hierarchy and the presidents and the CEO and stuff. And I don't think it's really got much to do with them at all. It comes back to the players. During the week at training, our skills are amazing, even with pressure out there on the ground. And I think when we come into games, then we do miss those early opportunities to kick some scores. And in the grandstand, I was watching. And in the first quarter, we looked at I thought, man, we're going to absolutely smash it today. And the boys started clicking really well. And then, just kind of fell away from there. I don't know if early opportunities that we miss kind of puts a bit of a downer on it. But, we seem to be able to run out games and stuff. It's just not really working for us at the moment. And we've got to figure out, once we figure it out, then we'll be able to go from there. But you got to realise that the first game, we're beating Port Adelaide for three quarters. And, we dropped away in the last quarter. Mm. We had a chance against Richmond, lost that. And, Essendon was a really bad game, and so was Melbourne. So, it could be two from four, but it just hasn't swung that way for us.
What has the feeling been at the club this week?
It's actually been you could have some fake up and about, around the club, but it's actually the boys really want to get that win. So, we've been training well, and, the meetings haven't been too negative about some positives because we have been playing some good footy. It's just not putting the, four quarters together, as everyone says. But, no, around the club, it's actually pretty good. It's kind of hard when you rock up to the club on the day after the game or a couple of days after, and it's full of media at the front, and you got all the cameras pointing at you asking all the questions and stuff. But we just try and make it as simple as possible, and we're going to come in here and train our efforts, train what we've got to do for Western Bulldogs this week. We know what our game plan is, and we're going to stick by it. Mick's put a great plan in front of us, and we just have to perform it because as much as he can do, he can't be out there on the ground taking the marks. I think we only had three inside 50 marks, and he can't do that. So
the players then are solidly behind the game plan, Patrick, because that's a thing that keeps coming up. Mick's game plan is not working for the team, or he's lost the players, or you don't have confidence in the game plan. What do you say to that?
Well, I think Mick's game plan is 100% spot on. I think sometimes the problem is we go away from the game plan, and that's where it's letting us down. We sort of and that comes back to execution as well, where we break down at the start, and that's leading to turnovers and scores off turnovers. So, no, the playing group is 110% behind Mick's game plan. There's no question about that. He still wouldn't be in the business if he didn't have a good game plan in place. So, as a playing group, we thoroughly support his game plan, and we just got to get it right.
And the thing is, his motto is defend first. That's all you want to do is defend first, and players haven't been doing that. So, what can you do?
Is there going to be? I think I read somewhere online over the week that Mick was thinking of either just scaling back the emphasis on defence for the Western Bulldogs game, and that there'd be more, I guess, personal autonomy, more decision making handed over to players. Is that true, Robert?
That hasn't been spoken about. We haven't had our meeting. We have that tomorrow in our main session. But as you see, you've got some stats in front of you. The Bulldogs are second highest in the league for disposal, and.
Yep.
So you definitely want to be able to defend. You don't want to let players run loose, so you want to close down their short kicks because they've got some amazing users in the team. They've got McRae, who's young blood coming up, and just the same old Bob Murphy and stuff. So, we have to shut them down. If we don't shut them down, they're just going to run all over us, as any team in the AFL.
Okay, so the key to making that game plan effective then is, like I said before, the rate on the return of effort, its skills, its finishing.
It's just taking our opportunities. When you see a short kick, keep the kick, then just take your time, play on. Or we've got a lot of license to play your own game and take it on as it is. But also you've got to take in consideration that we do have a game plan, and we might want to switch it more often than we might want to try and get the other side and hit some targets up, because we haven't been going as long as we wanted to as well to contest. I think Wadey went back to the VFL for not leading up, and we bring in Levi, who took a few good marks. So it's a lot of competition there for spots and stuff. So we just got to keep at it, because if we start doubting ourselves, then it's going to be worse.
There's been talk of the difference Juddy will make to the team once he is back. How big a difference do you think he will make, Robbo? And is that at all a priority in the playing group at the moment?
Well, Juddy's a massive on-field leader. As you've known, he's had West Coast days and early days at Colton, especially the last 4 or 5 years he's been here. He's won a few BNFs and a Brownlow. So definitely, he's a massive inclusion for the team, but we can't rely on one bloke. As I think Simo might have said in the interviews this week, it's a full team performance. And We need everyone being a leader. We have a pretty big leadership group and seven blokes, I think. So it shouldn't come down to Juddy. But, you know, as saying that, he'll come on and will give us some experience. And I think we might feel a little bit taller when he's out on the ground. But, yeah, it takes 22 blokes to put in the same effort.
You're a senior player. Do you feel the weight of responsibility on you to show genuine leadership to younger players like Patrick?
Yeah, I do. As you know, I'm coming up to my 91 games now, so I'm closing on 100. And once you get 100, you're pretty much, you know, a mature leader of the club. So, you know, I might not have the role as a leadership group player, but you know, you got to show something. And what I've done in the past is my aggression and the tackling, and you know, trying to do the hard things early and you know, set the standard for the boys. But everyone's got their little piece in the pie, and they, you know, they got to bring something to the team. Otherwise, we wouldn't be playing.
Anything to avoid members waving their membership tickets in a very angry way at you as you walk off the ground, Patrick. You were born in the year that Carlton last won a premiership, 1995. Since that time, plastic cards have replaced the old cardboard membership. Cardboard memberships were great for angry fans because you could tear them up. That's very hard with a plastic card. You can't... Unless you bring scissors.
Unless you're like Cripper and you're a big 95-kilo bloke and you just
snap
it in
half. Exactly, you can just tear them apart with your
biceps.
Little fingers.
Yeah.
I know you ask Cripper, but I
absolutely hate that. Yeah. I hate that. Especially, you know, supporters have every right to be, you know, angry at the loss. And, you know, we go out every week, not just trying to win for ourselves and the coach and the president and CEO and all that kind of stuff. We want to give something back to supporters. We know when we get drafted to this club that it is a successful club and we want to bring a premiership back here. So, you know, and especially I think a couple of years ago, we'll pretty hot, like finish high in the finals and we're going pretty well. And seeing as we got to a 0-4 start, I think, you know, they have every right to be angry, but I don't know. It's definitely annoying. I just feel like having a one-on-one with them when you walk off the ground because you are busting your ass out and you are trying. It just doesn't work for you sometimes, but if it's a lack of effort, then, you know, they have every right to be angry.
Well, do you think there was a lack of effort, though, against Melbourne? Because we did look at times insipid. We did look like we weren't trying. That was the really frustrating thing, and that is what gets members really upset. And also, you don't have to reach that far back to very dark days at Carlton when that kind of game wasn't that unremarkable.
I definitely don't think it was a lack of effort. I know everyone came off and gave everything they could. So lack of effort's definitely not something that we go out in the ground and it just like that just occurs. We I think everyone sort of put in their 100% on the ground. I'm just sort of, for me, the first game, it's just the execution that I reckon the main thing. But in terms of what the members waving their membership cards, I think as a playing group, we are a united group. As an organisation, we are united. So
Wave them when we win.
Well,
you know, wave them,
like,
say, look, we're proud to be members of the Carlton Football Club.
There's nothing
wrong
with being passionate about a club, so you can see where they're coming from. It's just, you know, you've got to stick together, because once the Carlton supporters start bagging the players and stuff, it just goes on from there, and then it just looks ugly. But, yeah, we've got to give them something to cheer about, and hopefully this is Sunday when we beat the Bulldogs.
I'm just going to move off this topic shortly, but with one last question to you, Robbo. There's been talk about a list clear out at the end of the year with Greg Swan and Mick saying that there will be turnover. Does your career prospects affect the way you're playing at the moment? Does that go through the group? Are they thinking, geez, I might not even have a job here next year?
Not really at all. Last year, we even knew what was going to happen at the end of the year before it even started. So we played finals last year and Mick said, you know, there's five or six untouchables and everyone else up for discussion. So, you know, I'm coming to my last year of my contract and that's the last thing I'm thinking about is, you know, going out there and like dominating just to get another job. We want to go out there and win. And when you start playing selfishly, that's when, you know, you start having bad runs and 0-4 and stuff. But, you know, there's a few blokes out of contract and if we get them signed up sooner than later, then, you know, that'll be better for us. But, you know, there's clean outs at every club at the end of the year usually. And once Mick gets his, you know, 3 years at a club and has a team that he wants to have, and, you know, you can't really judge a coach by just coming to the team. So
yeah,
it's kind of hard for him at the same time. Like, he's going to try and put the list in front of him that he can do. And, you know, Greg Swan and Styx Kernan has been amazing in the area. So has Macca. So no, they've been really good. If they want to keep me, that's fine. That's why I'm packing up.
Good on you. You do have an extra mouth to feed.
Yes. Speaking about my boy. It's all about the boy.
Patrick, I'm guessing, I think I can say with some confidence that you're figuring in long-term plans here at Carlton, so I don't think you need to worry about that. Your greatest moment on Saturday, what highlight did you take from your debut game?
Definitely wasn't my second touch where I got caught holding the ball. But
welcome to the big lead, son.
The goal's lighted up in front of me. He's like, no way. I'm running into the goal here and boom. That's all right.
Just running out on the field for the first time was definitely the highlight for me. It's just an amazing feeling. And just when the crowd roars and the song comes on, it's... I remember just even last year watching all the AFL games, especially Carlton games, and thinking I'd love to be doing that one day. So to actually, that happened to me is, that was definitely the best part of the day.
It looks pretty good in navy blue, I must admit.
It's thrilling. You know, can I just tell you, it's fantastic. The difference between VFL, where, as I said before, you've just been dominating, and AFL, a lot of players who make that jump talk about the speed and intensity. Was that your experience?
The speed and intensity definitely is the main part. I think... especially the stronger bodies around a contest. I think obviously a lot of them players have had numerous pre-seasons in the gym, so they're a lot stronger, hard to move. I think you got to be really clean in the AFL level. You don't have time to fumble, where in the VFL you probably get away with it a little bit. Just that first option. And another thing I found is, especially good players, say someone like Daniel Cross, who I played on, just his reaction time on the spread is elite. And you could be ball watching for half a second when they had the ball, and all of a sudden he's got 5 metres on you, and that's all he needs. So it's little things like that that are definitely a lot more sort of greater in the AFL than the VFL. So
you're physically obviously no slouch. You're 90 kilos. You're 194 centimetres. How have you gone in the time trials?
When I first came in, my fitness was the sort of something I needed to work on. And I did improve my fitness. This pre-season, that's an ongoing thing over numerous pre-seasons. So in the next couple of pre-seasons, that's my goal, to get it down to a really sort of elite midfield level. Obviously being a big inside body midfielder, it's sort of harder to keep up with the little fellas. But it's something that's my aim in the future.
Do you see yourself playing in the midfield, or would you be a swing role player? Ideally, how would you like to see your career go?
I think with the new interchange cap rule, the rotations are less. So I think with my body, I've got to start utilising sort of the size. So if I can go down forward and rest down forward or be a target down there, that's sort of an area of my game that I want to develop. But I still want to be the sort of the big inside body midfielder at the club. So, that's sort of how I see myself playing.
194 centimetres is pretty tall.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Well, how tall are you, Robert?
184.
Yeah, well, I'm 180. I'm the shortest guy in the room, which is a bit pathetic. So you guys can beat me up later on if you want. What are you... I mean, you've moved over here from Perth. You're living... What's your domestic setup?
I'm living with a host family in Essendon. So, okay. They're an awesome host family. They're only 34, I think. So they're really young, and they understand what I'm going through at the moment. They've got a little tacker who's a 1.5 and sort of... sort of feel like a big brother to him, really. It's pretty awesome time at the moment. He's sort of starting to run around and starting to talk and calls me Pat. So every time I walk in, he sort of yells out Pat about 10 times.
Sounds a bit clucky to me, to be honest.
Has a big smile on his face. But the club's been amazing with the setup and the support. Obviously, it's a big move, moving from WA, moving away from family and friends. But, the way the welfare manager has sort of set everything up has been awesome. So
have you got a missus, mate?
Nah.
Loved up?
Nah, mate.
Oh, big crippers, single guys? What's your
Facebook? Okay, ladies, take careful note.
Plenty of time for that.
Just, are you warned about ever sharing a house with Mitch Robinson? Obviously, it's not going to happen now, but there is a list of players like Eddie Betts and AJ, Robbo Aaron shared Joseph. A house and then didn't in circumstances that we heard about last week.
Mate, I can't live with a player ever. I see him every day, go home to him. I live with Whitey and AJ, Aaron Joseph, and I absolutely hated them. Like, you don't understand. Yeah, I wanted to fight both of them.
I've actually got a funny story about Robert. Apparently, I was talking to Whitey, and the first year, Whitey goes, "Oh, can you just boil some spuds in the pot?" And he smelled this burning smell. All of a sudden, he went over to the pot, and Robert was boiling it with no water in it.
Yeah, so. He's trying to make mashed potato. I had no idea.
You're from Tasmania and you can't boil a potato.
What's that got to do with being Tasmania?
They grow potatoes in Tasmania.
They don't grow potatoes in Victoria.
Well, not as good as
maybe
Tasmania.
Maybe if I was Irish, mate, if I was like, Zach Tilly only know how to boil a potato, then he would be saying something.
There are a few Irishmen around the club to actually ask, Robbo.
Mate, I just eat Maccas and eat kangaroo and stuff. It's got nothing to do with...
Okay. Well, Robbo, you might not be put in charge of Carlton's effort to put a man on the moon.
Hey, that was six years ago. Now I'm flying.
Right,
I can cook baked beans. I can cook Weet-Bix.
Right.
Roast
Great. All right, dinner at Robbo's place then, Patrick, next week.
No, I'm busy.
Now, Patrick, your first time on the podcast with Mitch Robinson, me, Tony Moklis. What we're going to do now is hit you with a quiz, and you've got a quiz about a teammate.
I've missed this.
The last two in your absence, Robbo, haven't they been that flash? Basically, the answer's gone early.
I wonder why.
All right? So we'll see.
Is that because I'm not as smart as the other two?
No, I'm not saying that at all. No.
You hit that well. You hit that very well.
No.
It's all right.
No,
we'll see.
I'm just saying there was a... I think it's my body language gives it away. Maybe. So I'm going to just play this really straight. Okay. This is actually for both of you. Both of you are playing. Do you know your teammates Mitch Robinson and Patrick Cripps? First question. I made my debut for the Blues in 2013 during the round six clash against Melbourne.
Troy Bender?
No.
No? Hang on. Nick Graham.
No. Question number two. I am 184 centimetres tall.
Dill Buckley.
No.
What is it, sir?
I'm 184 centimetres tall. I'll give you a clue, Robbo. This won't help you, unfortunately, Patrick. This player was on the podcast last year.
I said Dill
Buckley. As a guest. Okay. My grandfather played for North Melbourne from 1963 until 1969. No. Question number four. Clue number four. I initially began my career at Carlton playing under a different Guernsey number to the one I currently play under.
Oh, Jared Kasia.
Well done, Patrick Cripps. There we go.
You should have sat down the burger joint.
I wasn't going to. That was too much of a giveaway. He's a Maltese lad and he's a friend of the podcast and he was a terrific guest. Making his senior debut with the Blues, he spent a year playing in Sandful. At last year's BNF, he was awarded the best first-year player.
Second year round. That's stupid, eh? How can you get, because I didn't get it my first year because AJ did, because it was like his second year and it was my first year.
He
couldn't get any
process.
Games in his first year, so that's unfair. He's had a pre-season under the belt. What do you reckon, Cripper? Should a best-year player be the first-year player?
Yeah, I reckon it should be.
Yeah.
Get it right.
I think the club might have enough to contend with at the moment, Robbo, without rejigging the whole...
Not winning games, but let's just have a look at that next, player. I reckon. Once you win a game, we'll bring that up the next meeting, right?
Yes, all right. Now, all 40 players on the list are going to be tweeting this week with the hashtag...
United.
Okay.
Manchester United.
No. What does that mean to you? Hashtag United that you will be tweeting with this week, Patrick Cripps.
Oh, it's obviously the group to, right behind each other... I think the whole organisation's really a united group, so it'd be great even if the fans could use a hashtag United and get some support behind the team. Obviously, it's a bit of a rough point at the moment, but I think if we stay united and work together, sooner rather than later, we'll be back up top.
Damn straight. Robbo, what does hashtag United mean to you?
I just think it's showing that we are banded together and it's not a crisis at the moment. You don't have to listen to external media and that kind of stuff, and we want to kind of stick together. We know what we're capable of. We play some great footy and we play some not so good footy, but we know that we stick together and we get a win. And it's kind of like saying, you know what, we're here and we're staying. We're going to have a big year.
Remember history, 1945, Carlton started off very poorly. Very poorly indeed. Won the grand final in a bloodbath that year.
Let's go.
So, let history be your guide. Thank you very much, Patrick Cripps, for coming
Thanks,
in. Good
Cripper.
Luck next week.
Legend, mate.
And Robbo, good luck. Let's smash the Western
back.
Bulldogs.
It's great to be back.
Go Blues. This is Carlton Podcast with Tony Moklis and Mitch Robinson.